So we'll be talking about deformation of integral cars isotropic some manifold in symmetric manifold. So I noticed in the announcement somehow this is omitted. Well, actually without this it's quite hard to understand. Actually, you know, actually I don't really know how to, you know, deform in more general situations. So well, that's okay. right. So you know, I don't want to pretend I'm doing the general ones. All right. So so let's start with basic. So the context for this, of course, is synthetic geometry. So you have a, you start with a synthetic manifold by which we mean, of course, omega is a closed two-form non-degenerate two-form. So that's what is synthetic manifold. So from synthetic point of view, suppose you give a submanifold. From synthetic point of view, now one understand what is nice submanifold in here. So that's a submanifold. So well, only thing you can really do is to restrict omega to S. All right. So you get a two-form, which is S, all right, and the synthetic, well, from synthetic point of view, it's natural to classify submanifold by rank of this form, restriction form, all right, and according to this point of view, there is roughly two types of them. Okay, the first time, so let me write down the rank of omega s. So there are two types of them. One is when the rank actually is maximum. All right, so in this case, in effect, rank, the highest you can go is really dimension of s, real dimension. All right, so that's called symplectic submanifold. All right, the other type obviously is when the rank is minimal. Okay, in this case, there is actually two situations. It's convenient to describe in two situations. One of them is when the dimension of this submanifold is less than half dimension. Being symplectic means the manifold have to be having, you know, even dimension, so half dimension of total symplectic manifold. Okay. In this case, the condition is being minimal is simply is zero rank, which means omega equals zero. So omega s equals zero. This kind of submanifold is called isotropic. Okay. The other case is when dimension is larger or equal to the half dimension. All right. And that case is we can, well, more precisely, the condition is let me write here rank omega s equal to dimension. So I mean, being minimal rank, that means this condition. Okay, and this type of submanifold is called co-isotropic submanifold. All right, so here? Yeah, you suppose you consider the only considered case that's actually even. Okay. I'm sorry? Only, well, what is caused the child to have to satisfy this condition? That's what I mean. Okay, yeah. Okay, so let me see if I'm making sense. Maybe not. Let's see. Yeah, sorry. You're right. it should be twice of that, right? You're right. Okay. Okay. So that's what it is. So of course, you know, you may remember, where's the old famous Lagrangian sum manifold? Well, Lagrangian sum manifolds, they are, remember the condition that rank, I mean the dimension equals a half, where so from the definition over there, you can see that Lagrangian sum manifold actually is it is both isotropic and coisotropic. So it's an example of both. All right. So so if you draw a picture, that's basically the type of sum manifold I just described about. Basically, you have here is the symplectic, and then here is maybe isotropic, and this is coisotropic. And over here, this is Lagrangian sum manifold. All right, so that's where we have. Okay, so what we are interested is actually one question I was actually thinking about is, you know, from this picture is that how much can we, you know, the topology of the total space is actually generated by the topology. It's a question. Maybe I write down this. If you know, people can tell me about it. It's just curiosity. So, how much is homology synthetic and or isotropic submanifolds? You know, I would like to ask, you know, expert in synthetic geometry about this. I don't know. I mean, this, of course, it cannot be, it's not, you know, what I mean is generated is not really mean span, because it's clearly not span, because product of a synthetic submanifold and isotropic submanifold is not either of those. So, maybe some product or something. I don't know. To what extent the topology of the manifold can be understood from those interesting submanifold from synthetic point of view. So I don't know if anybody knows anything about this, but that's kind of curiosity. But what we are interested in this talk, okay, is really about, so this will be, you know, some kind of analog of synthetic analog of Hall transistor, right? Anyway. So so what we are interested in deformation, in this talk, we are interested in deformation of coisotropic submanifolds. Okay, I will also want to understand, you know, what's understand the concept. Well, this is in synthetic context. In a Keeler context, one would also want to understand what is the meaning of minimum quotation mark here, because, you know, in what sense is minimum? It can make sense in many ways. And and also about their deformation. And this relation to the deformation of cluster Sharpe-Whorf manifold. Right. So that's kind of what we're interested in. So, yeah. Of course. Of course, yeah. When I talk about them, right. So, let's start by reviewing deformation of Lagrangian submanifold. This is because it's related. Okay. So let me give you a trivial picture of what you think of Lagrangian submanifold. Okay, trivial example. Okay. So that's the simplest example of Lagrangian submanifold. Actually, it's quite useful picture to keep in mind is really just the curves, real curves, and Riemann surface. If you draw the picture or something like this, this is the case we can definitely comfortably imagine in our mind some genus. So, for example, you could have a curve like this, or maybe a curve here. So that's Lagrangian in Riemann surface with any symplectic form. It doesn't really matter because one dimension restriction is always equal to zero. So so now let's try to consider the deformation. Okay, deformation. So deformation is you're given a Lagrangian in this case, a Lagrangian inside Lagrangian submanifold. So a deformation means a vector field, right? Vector field defined on L. So you start with a vector field, V that's in a section of tangent bundle of total manifold restrict to L. All right, that's deformation. So one fact easily observed is that for this vector field to be tangent to L, the Lagrangian manifold itself, it's the following condition. So V is actually inside, it's a section of the tangent bundle. That's if only if when the contraction of V with the symplectic form equal to zero, right? This is easily, one can easily observe that because the definition of Lagrangian manifolds. So from this fact, we have the association of V to alpha equal to the contraction gave a natural identification of the normal bundle, which is the quotient of tangent by tangent to X, so tangent to L, to be identified with just the cotangent bundle of L. Okay, so that's the natural identification you have over here. So namely, your deformation, so deformation is naturally a section of normal bundle. So in symplectic in Lagrangian situation, that can be understood as a section of cotangent bundle. Okay, so we use this point of view. It's a one form on L. So we associate the infinitesimal deformation to a one form alpha, okay, which is one form alpha. So so in particularly this one form is going to give you infinitesimal Lagrangian deformation if B alpha equal to zero, and if it's just closed, when it's closed it gives you Lagrangian deformation, and when it's exact, it gave you the Hamiltonian deformation, of course. All right, so that's the well-known fact. So the deformation was studied by Alan Weinstein. In the 70s, more precisely, in the papers in 1951. So what he proved is actually for deformation of Lagrangian submanifold, actually the picture is quite simple. So the local deformation is unobstructed, by which I mean, of course, you know, each infinitesimal deformation can be extended to the honest deformation. So local deformation, okay? So moreover, the local moduli space, I'm sorry? Local deformation. Local deformation more than infinitesimal. It's going out a small neighborhood. Infinitesimal just means first order. This is a smooth Lagrangian submanifold. It's no local deformation for that smooth Lagrangian submanifold. I'm not talking about any singular Lagrangian cycles, anything. Okay. So the local moduli, in particular space, of Lagrangian submanifold modulus the Hamiltonian isotopies can be canonically identified with the H1 of L, well, most precisely open set, you know, open set is local in this, in H1 of the Lagrangian submanifold. And this is actually, this second statement actually is very precise. It gave you the so-called canonical affine structure on the moduli space, which is also what Eric was talking about the other day about this canonical affine structure on the base of this special Lagrangian fibration. Same, come from the same source. Okay, that's what Eric talked about the other day, Friday actually. So this is about Lagrangian submanifold, as we're known. And then there's a somewhat less well known, but it's also there for the isotropic submanifolds. There is similar result. I believe it's also by Alan Weinstein. By similar, I mean you just replace Lagrangian by isotropy. It's the same result, actually. Okay, so that's what happened in the both Lagrangian case, deformation of Lagrangian, and also by isotropic. Okay, so this result clearly is very important. You know, even though we do special Lagrangian, we use this very important fact. But actually, the proof is quite simple, though. I mean, although the result is very important, but proof actually is not that hard. So the key point of the proof. Yeah, same thing, a fine structure. But let me replace everything on the first statement, Lagrangian by isotropy, same result. I mean, stated exactly the same.
H1?
Yes, H1 of that isotropy submanifold, of course, not Lagrangian, isotropy submanifold, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right, so what's the key point of this? The key point of this proof, actually not a hard to prove, at least from, you know, modern point of view. So is this, the key point is this double Weinstein neighborhood theorem. which say that a neighborhood of the Lagrangian submanifold in X omega, a tubular neighborhood suitably chosen, will be equivalent to, will be symplethomorphic to the neighborhood of L in the standard model, which is the cotangent bundle with the canonical symplectic form, which, if you remember, the standard symplectic form on the cotangent bundle. So from this neighborhood theorem, so this gave a very clear picture locally what the neighborhood of Lagrangian look like. So with this neighborhood theorem, one can easily associate a C1 family deformation of this Lagrangian C1 deformation of the Lagrangian submanifold with, using this theorem, a family of one form that is closed one forms, okay, namely Lagrangian near L in the neighborhood that characterized by this closed one forms. So therefore, you can almost directly see from this the that result actually of Weinstein. Okay. So this is the key point of this. So this is the picture for the deformation of Lagrangian submanifold. So now let's try to study the deformation of corisotropic submanifold, particularly integral corisotropic submanifold. Are there any questions? So so in the context of corisotropic submanifold, so let's first explain what is corisotropic submanifold in more detail. So to understand the corisotropic submanifold, one should probably start with free symplectic manifold. So what is a free symplectic manifold? That is a manifold Y with omega Y, where omega Y is a closed two-form with constant rank. That's the generalization of symplectic manifold because, you know, it just for symplectic manifold, just the rank, the full rank. So this is but this, you don't need the even dimension. It can be odd dimension also. Okay, so in this case, once you're given a presymplectic manifold, you can associate a null distribution which is the orthogonal complement of the tangent inside the tangent of Y. Of course, this is respect to the symplectic form. Okay, so so this is because the form is closed, that guarantees this distribution actually is integrable. Okay, namely, you actually, this gives rise to an honest null foliation, which is a smooth foliation. That's very nice. So that the tangent, I use this, you know, the tangent on the foliation leave direction is equivalent to the distribution, of course. Okay, so that's null foliation. So this is what is a presymplectic manifold. In particular, if you're given a corisotropic y, that is inside the symmetric manifold x, omega, that will naturally give that is y with the omega y equal to omega restrict to y. Okay, so that's quite standard. So then obviously for your catastrophic submanifold, you also have a null affiliation associated with it. All right. That's a basic notion. So before I actually start talking about deformation, I want to give you a little, the relevant literature history on this recent interest on the catastrophic submanifold. So it's a very catastrophic submanifold is a very classical object. Okay, had been investigated a long time ago. Alan Weinstein clearly one of them. So there have been recent interest on this catastrophic submanifold. In particularly this from mirror symmetry. So this work of Kapustin, Orlov, right? And then there's so that's actually I'll even give you the number. You can look it up if you want to know more detail about this relation. So there's a recent work, not that recent, it's 01, but it's kind of recent compared to the ancient literature. So it seems that the catastrophic submanifold is needed to describe mirror symmetry for general collabial manifold. Okay, so that's in the side of chi category. So inside of Lagrangian, you actually generally want to consider catastrophic submanifold with some additional structure. Okay, not only the bare catastrophic with additional structure, actually put the extra constraint. We're not going to get into that. So my interest, actually I have independent interest to come up with, to study came from a vanishing cycle, understanding of vanishing cycle. Cycles of degeneration of Triller manifolds. Okay, so that's quite a different situation. So that's my interest. So, and we're interested in probably different type of catastrophic submanifold, but this is general deformation theory. Maybe I keep this picture for a while. Oh, actually, over here I forgot to describe this. Let me describe here. Over here I actually mentioned the deformation of Lagrangian deformation and Hamiltonian deformation over here for Lagrangian submanifold. It's actually nice to draw a picture in this context. Okay, locally you can consider, for example, a neck like this. Okay, so this is a nice Lagrangian circle. And then, so this is RL, okay? So Lagrangian deformation usually characterized by a circle moving away. Hamiltonian deformation, if you do that, it's more like a circle doing local shift, so that's actually That's why you have the Lagrange intersection of equal to 2, which is the sum of Betti number inside of Euler number, which is here. So that's a nice picture to keep in mind when you want to understand the difference between Lagrangian deformation and Hamiltonian deformation. Taylor degeneration of, you mean this? Taylor manifold? Yeah, so for example, well, of course, I'm actually in Calabi-Yau also. It's actually kind of fitting this picture in some way also. But another situation I'm interested in is the C1 negative, which is called general type Kalinitsa manifold. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. Yeah. So, all right, so, but the vanishing cycle, of course, gave you, in Calabi-Yau case, gave you just the special Lagrangian, which you don't need to worry about color isotropy. Yes, yes, I'm going to describe that when it come about. All right, so now let's try to continue this discussion. So so actually inspired by the work of Kapustin Orlov, there was work by Jung and O. And the Park, there's many Park, I believe, so this is one of the Park. So studied, so weird, they said, well, this is actually, I can give you the number of this paper too. So that is symmetric geometry, which is 03-05292. Okay, so weird, they studied. Basically, they studied the formal deformation. Color isotropy is a manifold. So notice it's formal, so it's kind of infinitesimal. Well, it's a parsis. Well, parsis do not need to converge. So this is really on a study of general color isotropy is a manifold. Okay, and they find that unlike the deformation that I described over there about the Lagrangian and isotropic, some manifolds. Unlike those manifolds, deformation of color isotropic submanifolds is usually obstructed. Well, that's a change. It's instead of being unobstructed, it's obstructed. And moreover, not only that, and is of infinite dimension. If you went to, you know, the talk by Jung Gang, you probably have heard about this. And that kind of having complicated structures that most generally can be described by a strongly homotopy Lie algebraic. Sounds very algebraic to me, but this is actually a structure involved to understand this formal deformation. And there is a lot of obstruction, even in many obstructions. One has to be vanished for this to be formally deformable. Okay, so you compare that with the nice picture of Lagrangian deformation, it's clearly quite a change, all right? So, so let me now explain the picture of deformation of color isotropy that might be able to understand this picture. I'm sorry? Yes. Yes. Maybe, I don't know. But but of course, in terms of the deformation part of Chopra cement, it's quite interesting to see generally what happened, general theory. Of course, you know, how that relates you to the mirror symmetry, you know, situation is not clear, because we don't know. So let's see the picture of deformation, you know, basically. If you talk about deformation of this cause topic Y in this X omega, okay, then you're talking about a vector field, which is just, you know, we start just like a Lagrangian setting. We have a vector field over here. Okay, then you first understand when this is going to be tangent to Y. So V is actually a section of the tangent bound of Y, if only if the contraction of V with omega restrict to the foliated, the foliation direction equal to zero. Okay, so this gave you that a natural association of V is natural association. Gives the natural identification of the normal bundle of this Y with the tangent, cotangent bundle of foliation, foliated direction, the leaf direction. Okay, so now let me write down the causotropic condition for infinitesimal deformation. So, you know, compare with the Lagrangian condition. So the isotropic condition for infinitesimal deformation that's represented by this alpha is d alpha, okay, restrict to the foliated direction equal to zero. Now that's actually the condition. Okay. So when you modular Hamiltonian deformation. So what is the Hamiltonian deformation? That means that the deformation specified by alpha that satisfy alpha restrict to the fiber direction, to the foliated direction, equal to df of a global function restricted to the foliated direction. Okay? That's the restriction of the exact form. So with this understanding, okay, this is infinitesimal description, infinitesimal space, the deformation space of the deformation, modular Hamiltonian. So you can write down it's a tangent space. This basically can be written as beta in omega 1 of y, d beta restrict to equal to 0 divided by beta plus df, where beta restrict to the fiber direction, the foliated direction, equal to zero. Okay, so that's actually the infinitesimal tangent space locally. Okay, but it's, yeah, whole Y. Okay, that's Hamiltonian deformation. Okay, give you Hamiltonian deformation. So So it is this space, which is actually turned out to be infinite dimension in general. Okay? And not each one of them can be deformed, even formally, okay? And that's its obstruction is investigated by this, in this Jungens and Park's work, and then they come up with this strongly homotopy Lie algebraic. So it's kind of very complicated for me. Okay. But from my point of view, because for me, the interest really comes from studying the vanishing cycle for degeneration of Taylor manifold. So where the kind of causotropic manifold I encounter actually deform very nicely. Okay, so for me, very much like the Weinstein picture. So my interest is to to separate kind of, you know, the two types of deformation. One time is actually more analogous to the, you know, the Weinstein's result, and then the other is actually this more non-trivial or maybe kind of a complicated deformation. So my interest is part of the deformation that is analogous to Lagrangian isotropic case. Okay, so that's what my interest is. And that will lead me to, well, actually it came out from my study in the wrenching cycles over there, so that came up to be the so-called integral. So I will be concentrating on so-called integral tropic submanifolds. So let me first define it, okay? So by integral cross-isotropic submanifold, I mean cross-isotropic submanifold whose leaves of null affiliation are all closed manifold and form a vibration. Namely, there is actually a projection from this Y to a manifold S, so that fiber is the null foliation direction. And you have fiber for in this manifold S. In this case, okay, I'll give you an example in a moment. So in this case, there exists a symmetric form actually on S. So S omega S actually symmetric, so that omega Y equal to pi upper star of omega S. Okay, so that's what his integral cross isotropic submanifold is. So let me give you examples of this. So clearly, from this definition, you can try to easily cook up some very trivial example. For example, if F is Lagrangian in a symmetric submanifold, symmetric manifold, then clearly you can easily cook up a Y, which is equal to cross F, which is in being trivially cross-isotropic integral or something, but it's kind of trivial exercise. But then more interesting one, okay, first non-trivial one is actually this three sphere in R4 with the, you know, standard symmetric form, flat symmetric form over there. So round sphere, three sphere. Now in this case, okay, one can easily verify that the null affiliation in this case is exactly corresponding to the Hopf vibration, and this pi is a map from S3 to S2 with a standard omega, which is just the Hopf vibration. So once you see this construction, if you form symmetric geometry, you clearly see, now this obviously can be generalized to the situation of general moment map, because this is really the moment map. So generally, if you have a torus action, sympathetically, okay, you have the corresponding moment map, which is really the cotangent bundle of this PL. And then if you consider inverse image, if it's a smooth manifold, then this will be a natural example of Karsh-Chaffetz manifold integral. So that's that's probably a nice example from sympathetic point of view. So it's actually quite familiar. It's not really something that strange. But then there's a question. Okay, this is actually special constructions, right? So even the third example, you need a action. Okay. So then the general question is, what if you think about general sympathetic manifold? What will be the natural way? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, if you and the Lie group, but for me, of course, this is an easy example to write down. But the general, you probably have to, do some more restrictions. So if you think about general sympathetic manifold instead, say how to actually construct natural Karsh-Chaffetz manifold. So how the Karsh-Chaffetz manifold come up naturally in a general sympathetic manifold? Now that's kind of question, right? Interesting to know. Such a natural construction always is very useful. For example, if you think about ask a similar question about sympathetic submanifold, what's the natural way to write down a sympathetic submanifold in a sympathetic manifold? Actually, hard to do. You think about, you get a sympathetic manifold just over there, and then you write down a sympathetic submanifold. And there's nice construction by Donaldson. If you remember this construction of sympathetic hypersurface. Using the sympathetic form and the almost complex structure, so that's actually a canonical way to construct sympathetic submanifolds from general sympathetic manifold, which is very nice. And he used that to understand sympathetic form manifold, for example. So that's that's what I mean by natural ones. Okay, for us, it's probably not quite as natural as that one, but in my point, it's quite natural already. So let's write down a construction, which is from vanishing cycle. So let's write down the situation here. So this actually is in a probably better understanding in the context of Keeler manifold. Okay, so suppose you have a family of Keeler manifolds. Okay, Keeler manifold. Make it easy. So that they degenerate to a central fiber, which is X0. You can think of algebraic family, so with the Keeler metric, so that you have the sympathetic form with it. Of course, you can also stay with the purely sympathetic point of view. So so suppose X0 is a normal crossing okay, so that L is less than the compact dimension, which means a half the real dimension. Okay, so then you can consider, so this is the degeneration picture. Okay, the smooth one degenerates to several number crossing pieces. Okay, so now you can consider in this case the define the intersection of those, so the place where it's most degenerated. Okay, and then consider so here I require the Keeler class is unchanged. Keeler class is fixed. Okay. So here one would like to use so-called Hamiltonian gradient flow. Which is well defined in Keeler deformation. Okay, so let me tell you the definition. So this is actually the flow generated by the vector field V equal to gradient F over. So imagine this actual family is in a in a total space, and there's a lifting of the omega in the total space, which is actually unique up to a certain ambiguity, which doesn't matter. So you have this natural defined vector field, which is I call Hamiltonian gradient vector field. So here F is the real part of T. It's a function defined as total space. So you can take gradient everything. So it's a real function, okay? And this flow will generate a flow that actually carry xt to x0. I define this. So this is actually more like inverse flow map, okay? It's not only map xt to x0, it's symplectic. I call this kind of thing symplectic morphism instead of symplectomorphism because it's not a diffeomorphism, morphism, but it does preserve symplectic form. Namely, notice here that this is actually singular, all right? X0 is actually singular. So in particularly, under this construction, you may ask, what is the inverse image of S? So let's Y equal to under this flow, okay? Then it turns out under this construction, this YT is a natural, is a coisotropic. It's an integral. So that's, to me, is kind of natural example that you can construct in quite a general situation under sort of degeneration situation in a synthetic, you know, Kähler manifold. F of T is a function you can think of defining the total space of total space on the deformation, and the T is a real part of that. That's a real function. T is a complex function, of course, real function. So this is actually T real. Okay, but the other T complex, you have to have a phase over there to adjust that. Yeah. Question? Yes. First of all, let me mention that this is actually the flow I used in my previous work to construct Lagrangian vibration for Calabi-Yau manifold, actually. And so in this case, actually, it's very easy to see why it's integral coisotropic because this condition, you see? Okay, so this is actually a vibration. This is actually a natural vibration. Well, first of all, okay, sorry. There's natural vibration from YT to S using the flow. Okay, so the fiber actually is exactly because of this condition. Okay, and this Y, S is symplectic. Okay, so you pull back, you have to be zero on the fiber. That gives you the isotropic direction of the coisotropic, so that's the vibration. So that's the integral in this case. It's very easy to see, actually. This is actually the way to understand the vanishing cycle. In general degeneration, your vanishing cycle can be revealed by this map, okay, synthetically. I'm sorry? What structure on total space? I'm sorry. Kähler structure. Yes. So there's a canonical Kähler structure up to lift from the base, which doesn't affect this vector field. Yeah. For detail, you can see my previous work on this one. Yeah. It's canonical. This construction is canonical. So once you're given the family of Kähler metric, this is actually the canonical construction. You can come with it. So what I can prove, let me show you what I can prove. First of all, infinitesimal deformation for this case, first order, which is infinitesimal deformation in this case, can be characterized differently than the previous case. Okay, and it turns out this space is in fact equivalent to to this. Okay? Now what is this? Over here, H is a local system. On X, on S. Where it's defined is its fiber on each at each point is equal to H1 of the fiber. Okay. And for each point in the base. Alright, so so the actual realization is the following. So you start with the beta, you associate with this this section defined this way. So the homology class of beta restrict to the fiber, okay, for each S, to give you a section in here. So this section is locally constant because this beta is satisfied this condition. Locally constant section, so that's naturally equivalent to that homology. So one consequence is this is finite dimensional, obviously. I mean, that's the finite dimensional, first of all. Okay, so okay, and then so what we can show is so basically. And there's also another map, which is beta go to gamma. Okay, so which I call perceive, which is H0 of S of H that go to H2 of S over R, real number. Okay, so so this map, well, you know, each one of them have a d beta equal to gamma, so the association beta to gamma is a natural map. And this map you can also easily see by the spectral sequence of the vibration. So it's actually one of the maps. Okay, so so now let's try to talk about a little bit. So okay, first of all, when you beta actually, so we want to show basically each of this beta can be extended to a deformation, quasi-trivial deformation, right? So it's unaffected, okay? Unlike in the general case. So the so first of all, let's see the situation when this perceived beta equal to zero. Okay. So what that really mean is the same thing as beta is closed, d beta equal to zero. Okay. So that's actually a situation very easy to deal with. The way to deal with this is to extend beta to beta tilde UY, which is a tubular neighborhood of Y. Okay? And then you have corresponding vector field. Which extend the vector field V that satisfy this, so that so it's because beta, so that over here d beta prime tilde is still zero, then you can run the flow of V tilde, and that is symplectic flow, right? So symplectic flow gave you the family. If this is phi t, you know, the flow of V tilde, and then you get the family. So that's very easy, actually. Okay. Now, this is actually the same way. This is actually, if I should mention, this is actually also the method you can, another alternative method, you can prove this Weinstein or situation in Lagrangian isotropy. Because on those cases, the beta is always zero. So you can always extend. So this is the part that's analogous, strictly. It's really generated by symplectic flow. Okay. Then the more difficult part, though, the more non-trivial part for this situation is that when what happens when it's non-zero, okay, when it maps to here, that's non-zero. So, well, then it's not closed anymore, so you cannot just extend it by this way. So then you're going to run into the general difficulty for deformation of isotropy. Okay, there's a All right. So difficulty. So first difficulty is that the major difficulty is that d beta. So you want to require this condition to be preserved. It's very hard to preserve this condition. Okay? Because your foliation, when you deform a little bit, it's going to become different. And how are you going to make sure this is still going to be true when you deform away from the Y you start with? Okay, it's very hard to make that. For example, I remember I mentioned in the Lagrangian isotropic case, you use this neighborhood theorem, which is all powerful. Okay, in this case, actually, there is also a neighborhood theorem, which is nice. Okay, there's a neighborhood theorem. By actually several people, start with Goethe, and then there's Zambon, and then there's O and the Park. But the problem with this neighborhood theorem is it's all nice, but on the other hand, it's kind of a simple form. First of all, it's not explicit as you want, and then other than Y itself, there is actually in this neighborhood, there's no other apparent obvious causal choice of manifolds. Unlike in the Cotton demand, you have a lot of Lagrangian manifold. So the neighborhood theorem really not helping directly to give you this nice construction. Okay, the difficulty is this. So in our situation, we sort of explored the idea. What's our idea? So our idea is to instead of do it globally, we try to do it locally. Of this space S, Y project to S, capital S, this synthetic manifold. So with that, on U alpha locally, actually, you can usually do things nicely. Suppose this U alpha is actually contractible, then you actually can easily write the restriction of gamma to be equal to d beta alpha. All right. So, beta alpha prime. Let's use beta prime to distinguish from beta. And then, by our condition, you have okay. So on U alpha, you have d of beta minus pi alpha star beta alpha prime equal to 0. Okay, you can do that. So that means locally, now this actually doesn't affect your flow because if you compute, this is going to give you vector field which is tangent to the y direction. Not going to move your flow at all. Okay, it's not affecting flow. But on the other hand, once you do this, this becomes symplectic flow. So you can do the extension I did for the case when beta is closed, at least locally in that neighborhood. Okay, so that's nice. You can actually do that in general. Okay, but then the problem is, how do they match? I mean, if they don't match, it still doesn't make any sense to do this thing. So how do they match? So the way to make it match is by induction. I do it by induction. Okay, so I first, construct one of them, U1 maybe, and then to U2, and so on by induction. Okay, so then what's the point here is that suppose you have done some of those already. Okay, so now then you doing this for U alpha. Okay, then there are certain region is already constructed. Okay, now we want to extend it to the U alpha. How do you do that? Right. Well, you see, although this is a nice synthetic, but for different neighborhood, you have to use different gauge, which I mean this, okay? So it's not naturally coincidence, okay? So you have to really use adjusted gauge to actually do this deformation. So deformation is start with L, and then the thing you deform actually could be over here a family, or sometimes it may be self intersecting or something like that, okay? And when you adjust the gauge, actually this the restriction to different the deformation to different leaves of this deformation is actually could be quite contradiction. Okay, so it's not. So one of the key ideas, instead of consider extension of one of this form, you actually consider extension which is actually depending on t, depending on the time t of the deformation. So namely, you have a family vector field. So that's actually a general situation for dynamical system anyway. So your vector field actually depends on t. Okay. So you do that. So basically, try to contract each one of beta t so that you make sure that on each of this part you already constructed of the yt part, and then you extend it to the neighborhood of this in total space, and then you make sure they coincide with the previous one in this region. Okay. Well, this is easily said, but to do it actually needed some detailed manipulation, but that's a key idea. So you have actually a family of, so eventually you get a family of closed form defined on the neighborhood of this U alpha, so that gave you actually a symmetric flow, okay, which in this region coincides with previous flow, at least in a maybe slightly shrink the neighborhood, okay, and then that way you can extend it further to the whole thing. Okay, but the actual realization need, of course, a more clear than what I just said, but that's the basic idea, okay, for this. So you can see this curve is very very elementary, very much in the spirit of the Weinstein proof. So what we can show is this, that the first result is that the for any beta in there exists a family or you assume y to be integral to start with, for small t with, so that's what I mean by unobstructed. For first order deformation is represented by the beta class in here. All right, so And this is only unobstructed, so you can basically every direction you can deform out, but you still could have possibility of things like, okay, same thing, you have push sheet or deforming out or something like that. So this can also be ruled out, okay? So there's so this is basically existing result, and there is also uniqueness, and after all, you add them up, you get the more polished result, which is saying that there exists a canonical local open embedding IY on the moduli space to H0 as of this, just like in the Lagrangian case, under which orbit of symplectic morphisms can be identified with kernel of this map. Okay, so namely, this is basically the result for deformation in the situation. So, and I want to mention is the only thing I want to mention. Is can I do like 5 more minutes? Or? moment, something like that? Okay. So, I want to also mention the relation to minimal submanifolds. Okay. So this is a, actually I want to mention one thing first, is that this actually can be also extended, although I talk about the integral submanifold, the key point is the foliation structure is fixed. So if I assume foliation structure is fixed, I can actually even do it for general cross trapezium manifold, as long as you require in the deformation you maintain the foliation structure to be fixed. I can at least prove the unobjectiveness in that situation also. Okay, so it's more generic than this. But of course, the case you can really compute is this case. Okay, that's a side remark. But anyway, so now let's try to mention the relation to minimal. Isotropic submanifold. So this to start well, that's actually based on start with the minimum special Lagrangian, minimum Lagrangian we understood already in the Calabi-Yau case. So remember, you can consider the minimum or special, maybe start with special Lagrangian in Calabi-Yau. Or more generally, you can consider minimal Lagrangian in Killian-Einstein manifold. So that's usually referred to when C1 negative, general type thing. That's the comparison. So the Calabi-Yau case is C1 equal to 0. Okay. In the Calabi-Yau case, which is C1 equal to 0, remember the general philosophy is like this, that you're, in some sense, you're, well, at least we know this is locally special Lagrangian is locally unique, right? And it was also conjectured to be globally unique by some people in some cases, okay? So then the general picture looks like this. So you have a Lagrangian manifold, and you have a Hamiltonian deformation class, and then you have this Lagrangian deformation, and then if this is true, then it means if this even global is true, that means in each of this class there is a unique special Lagrangian, at least locally unique. Okay, so in that sense, you can understand the deformation of Lagrangian modular Hamiltonian equivalent to be equivalent, or even more canonical, geometrically described in terms of deformation of the special manifold, which is special Lagrangian. Okay, so that's more geometric. And it's also more canonical. Usually reveal nice, interesting geometric structure like SYZ conjecture. So it's a good example of that. So, and then this is what about C1 negative case? C1 negative general type Kähler manifold, you have to consider Kähler Einstein metric. And then, so where you consider minimal Lagrangian, which is actually minimal Lagrangian and special Lagrangian in Calabi-Yau case. But here there's a little trouble, is the minimal Lagrangian actually usually is isolated. So do not really corresponding to the deformation. Its deformation wouldn't correspond to deformation of Lagrangian, which is supposed to have first Bayesian number to be dimension. So how do you accommodate the situation here? It turns out you can consider following correspondence, which is the, so we still have this correspondence of deformation of Lagrangian modular Hamiltonian equivalent to be equivalent to something. So we want to know what that is. It turns out you can naturally, the right hand side is actually the deformation of H minimum Lagrangian. So what is H minimum Lagrangian? Well, H minimum Lagrangian actually is more natural from symplectic geometric point of view, because that simply means it's volume minimizing in the Hamiltonian deformation class. Okay? So it turns out it's locally, at least, for each of these Hamiltonian deformation class, there's a unique one. Okay? Versus dimension zero. So namely, you have for each, so philosophy is for each class you should have one, and they, their deformation should reflect the deformation of this. So one thing I want to mention is in this case the mean curvature one form, right? In the minimum Lagrangian case is equal to zero, but in this case it's harmonic. Just like in special Lagrangian case, namely, well, in the special case of Calabi-Yau, H minimum actually equivalent to special Lagrangian, and deformation have the first Bayesian number and dimension. So dimension equal to the first Bayesian number of this Lagrangian submanifold, the deformation of this H minimum situation. Okay, so last, let's go to the cause topic. So in the catastrophic situation, there is a, you know, we want to consider minimum catastrophic submanifold inside inside this Taylor manifold. Okay. Now, so clearly, what do you mean by minimum? There's many ways to define minimum in here. For me, the guiding principle is analog of this. You want it to be unique, locally unique. Inside the Hamiltonian deformation class. The natural definition for this, for me, is H minimum. As I introduced here, which is unique. So that can be written in a local condition that the mean curvature one form being called exact. Okay, yeah. All right, so in any case, so that's the definition of H minimum. So with that, one would have the corresponding so the principle is you want this unique in Hamiltonian deformation class. Okay, so it's called H minimum, and then with that, there is an example I probably skipped, and then let me give you the final result. So for me, I do this in the situation of, so basically in this case, you would expect minimum. Well, I mean, let me now write it down. It's exactly the same correspondence for catastrophic submanifold for integral deformation list. Okay, I don't know about non-integral deformation. So this, let me mention the case, the example that I mentioned before about this vanishing cycle. So what is the corresponding geometric result for vanishing cycle? I constructed using Hamiltonian gradient flow over there. For me, which is from Taylor degeneration point of view, where I would consider this minimal, the most natural way to find the minimal Lagrangian, that's also the question, where do you find the minimal, natural minimal Lagrangian of catastrophic things, if you want to find them. Okay, I believe the most natural way to find it is also at the vanishing point, vanishing cycles of degeneration. Okay, now even if you think about the Riemann surface, you visualize, you get that circle, it's actually, you think of a neck. Some way you're actually thinking of the degeneration of Riemann surface subconsciously. But anyway, so basically the result is, what I can do is, in particularly, the example I mentioned before, where you have this degeneration family of Taylor-Einstein manifold with the Taylor form being fixed. If you have a degeneration like this, which in algebraic sense means fixed polarization in algebraic geometry. So remember the situation is x0 equal to union of di and s equal to di, something like this. So in this case, we not only can construct integral catastrophic submanifold, we actually can construct YT to be in effect H minimum catastrophic vanishing submanifold, this integral cross the topic, H minimum, we can actually construct that. And we actually find out they actually naturally form a deformation family, which form a fibration. So there is actually a H minimal cross-atomic fibration. In a particular case, when this L over here is equal to the dimension, complex dimension of X, this is actually H minimal Lagrangian. I'm talking about over here is C1 negative. Okay. So you're actually in this most degeneration situation, you have actually in neighborhood, you have H minimal Lagrangian fibration, which I would think of as an analog of the special Lagrangian fibration in the SYD picture. Okay, so that's how, so in general, you can actually have H minimal causotropic fibration. Okay, so all this work is actually, for people who are more interested in this, you may look at O three, O three, one one two, 177. Right. So the first two is about degeneration of K-line submanifold. The last two is about H minimal Lagrangians. There's a the work is really about H minimal causotropic submanifold. I'm still writing it up. Although the idea is all there, but still writing up is kind of complicated. It's not posted yet. So let me finally give you the picture in this case. So in the case of the Riemann surface, you can see that the minimal is this one. H minimal are those, like this. And one thing I should mention is that they are canonical. So this is actually canonical. When you have K-line symmetric, it's independent of metric. You actually have this this vibration over there, which is canonical, independent of metric, actually. So I'll stop here.